Welcome to Sipping Success, the ultimate podcast for all things beverage and alcohol. We're here to quench your thirst for insights, analysis, and a splash of entertainment. Get ready to dive into the world of beverages with us. From the latest trends to in-depth discussions with industry leaders, we've got it all covered. Whether you're a connoisseur or a curious sipper, Sipping Success is your go-to guide. Join us as we uncork knowledge, raise a glass to innovation, and help you elevate your brand to new heights. So grab your favorite drink, sit back, and let's sip success together. Tune in to Sipping Success and drink in the wisdom. Cheers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sipping Success Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson, and we're really excited here with this episode. We have Jake Whitman, the CEO, founder of Really Good Boxed Wine, here joining us today, and he's going to share his story and share more about his business. And just for some background on Jake, he's originally a classical trained brand builder, having worked at Procter & Gamble, also worked in fintech as a product marketer for both SoFi and Intuit. But his real passion lied with entrepreneurship, and that led him to create Really Good Boxed Wine. And Really Good Boxed Wine is a high-end boxed wine designed to change your whole perspective on what can go in a box. So welcome to the podcast here, Jake. Very excited to have you on board. As we're all intrigued about the wine in a box, because we want to hear more about that story, can you share more about your background with us?
Yeah, sure. And excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. Couldn't have said it better myself. Our whole vision is to change perception of the box format. It's actually a pretty amazing format, and I'll talk a little bit more about it later. Quick background, you know, I don't have a professional wine background. I actually started my career with Teach for America. I was a special ed math teacher in Philadelphia, high school special ed math teacher in Philadelphia. Left that and started a nonprofit. So that was kind of my first foray into entrepreneurship. And after a couple of years of running that, it was called STARS, Sports Teaching and Reaching Students. I wrote a book, started a publishing company about the Teach for America admissions process, self-published the book, and then actually published a second book from another author under that label. So that from the very early days of my career was in entrepreneurship, and then pivoted to the corporate career that you sort of outlined. Did a big 180, spent about 5 years at Procter & Gamble, mostly on Old Spice and Gillette, very fun, you know, interesting brands. My last role was the global brand director for Gillette Personal Care, kind of run all of the global product development and all that, and then the North America P&L for that portion of the Gillette business, but also spent a long time on the Old Spice business. Decided I was interested in tech, so moved out to Silicon Valley, or moved to San Francisco to work in Silicon Valley at Intuit, spent a couple years there running the go-to-market team for the Intuit brand. And then my boss went to be the CMO of SoFi. And about 2 months later, I followed her to be the head of product marketing for one of SoFi's products. So about 10 years in the corporate world, kind of a variety of marketing type roles. But to your point, I think 10 years in, I was ready to go back to entrepreneurship and had actually left and was looking to potentially purchase a business. I was kind of in the entrepreneurship acquisition world when this idea came up. And as soon as I started kind of pulling the thread on it, I realized the opportunity was too big to not pursue and put the search to buy a company on pause and went after this full time. So that was in like May of 2021.
Okay, May of 2021. Great. So still pretty recent on all of our calendars then. So yeah, that entrepreneurial grit, you know, you have like a great solid corporate career, now back to sleepless nights as an entrepreneur. Before we really get into the story about the wine, just out of curiosity, what was like maybe a couple big takeaways from your work as a brander in the corporate world that is really helping you today?
There's a lot. And, you know, I get the question a lot is how much does the corporate experience hurt versus help you in entrepreneurship? Because it definitely does both. You get into the habit of having every resource under the sun at your fingertips. But, you know, I think some of the kind of the core strategic brand tenets, like the P&G brand building framework around, you know, start with the why, and then it's a who, what, how strategy can be applied to everything from, you know, technology products to big CPG to small startups, and having that kind of strategic lens on kind of everything you do. You know, there's maybe less discipline and time and money spent refining it, but having that strategic lens every time you're going out and doing anything with the brand, I think has really helped craft the brand to what it is today. And then just sort of knowledge of the P&L. I mean, at P&G, you step in the door and you have full P&L ownership top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of understand what a healthy P&L looks like. Mm-hmm. What, you know, how do you maximize growth while maximizing your gross margin? How do you minimize costs to try and get to profitability as quickly as possible through the P&L over time, but not stifling growth so much that you're not, you know, in the absolute obsession for profitability that you're not allowing the brand to grow as quickly as you could. So, you know, mm-hmm. I think those are the pros, right? Like you mm-hmm. I have a sense of what a healthy $500 million company looks like. I have a sense of what a healthy $100 million company looks like. And, you know, we're chasing those types of goals with this company.
Okay, great. And now I guess we'll move kind of to the question maybe everybody's been waiting for. So like, why wine in a box? Let's hear about that.
Yeah. So boxed wine is this really like amazing format. It's just really underappreciated and underutilized in the United States, especially. So wine is in this weird place in the alcohol industry where, like with beer, it's all single serve purchase or single serves, right? You open a beer, you drink it, it's a single serve. In liquor, you open a bottle and it doesn't go bad. Well, wine, you're forced to drink 5 glasses of wine every time you open a bottle within, call it a 24-hour period. And sometimes you don't want to do that. And so the box wine stays fresh for 6 weeks after you open it. You can have a glass whenever you want. And so that's one of the major benefits that kind of drew me to it. And my wife and I would buy boxed wine during COVID every once in a while, and we're really disappointed in the quality, but mm-hmm. we love these kinds of like benefits. It's also our packaging costs are almost 90% lower than the equivalent packaging costs in bottles. And wow. So we can actually invest a lot more into the quality of the wine. The data is like 27%. If your average $15 bottle of wine, 27% of the value of that is going toward the wine, right? And so you can, the rest of it is packaging and operations and all that. With ours, 75% goes into the quality of the wine. So I can sell amazing wine at half the price because our packaging costs are so much lower. It's half the weight. We don't need all the protection of glass and all that. So we can, it's an incredible value for the quality of the wine in this format. And then the third, and really one of the things that drew me the most to it is it's this dirty secret in the wine industry that the packaging and the transportation of glass bottles is far and away the biggest carbon footprint in the industry. So in over the California Sustainable Winemaking Alliance did a study that showed that over half of the carbon footprint in the wine industry comes from package from glass bottle and cork packaging and all the transportation of it. So our boxes, some estimates show from some experts, as high as 86% carbon footprint reduction versus bottles. And so it's this kind of amazing win-win where you don't have to pay like the sustainability tax. Like you actually can pay half the price and have an 86% carbon footprint reduction. It's this beautiful combination. We just need to get over the hurdle of the misconception that boxed wine can't be great wine. There's no technical reason you can't do it. Producers just don't do it. And so we're looking to change that.
Yeah. So the narrative around this, there are just so many great positive points to where,
absolutely.
It's just, and it's like you said, just no one had focused on quality before. It was just almost like, well, here we go. We'll just put this out in the marketplace. But putting some thought behind it, like you have, really kind of revolutionizes its place, I guess. So you started in 2021, you know, and we're standing here just on the cusp of 2024. So, you know, I kind of general question for you, like how have things gone? Like, have you gone through, have you kind of fought through some of those perception headwinds? Do you feel like you're really making a dent as far as like getting kind of a great, you know, good following for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, we face those perception headwinds every day. It is consumer barrier 1 through 5 that we are working to overcome. But I will tell you, the market is changing, and consumers, we're proving through not just what consumers tell us, but actually pulling out their credit cards and making purchases that the world is ready for this. And so it's not without its challenges. And it took us, you know, like any startup, everything takes twice as long. And it's taken us a little longer than I think we would have hoped to sort of find our foothold in how we, you know, convince people out in the world that this is actually, we're not trying to just like pull one over on you. Like, we're actually making amazing wine, like wine that would sell for $30 to $40 a bottle, and we're putting it in a box and selling it for half the price. It's taken us a little while longer to kind of find that growth, but we've found it, and we're finding that we're able to attract customers at a relatively rapid pace right now. And then once people purchase, they keep coming back. Our repeat purchase rates are really high. And we have almost as many people who have bought 5 times as who have bought twice. And so people who buy more than once tend to come back more and more. But you know, to ask about the obstacles, like, I'm not the entrepreneur that sits here and pretends that everything is rosy every single day. I think it's something that anybody who's thinking about going on into entrepreneurship needs to know, is that like, it is the roller coaster is real. We have our really great days and we have our really tough days. And sometimes those things are happening in the same day or the same week. And you know, you just work through it and figure out how to kind of solve whatever problem you're facing and you know, keep going.
So can you walk us through your offerings here? So like you mentioned the high quality wine is going in the box. You know, what normally do you have on stock that people can order?
Yeah, so we do vintage wines, which means we produce a certain amount of them, and when it sells out, it's gone forever, right? We're not manufacturing wines in a factory that, you know, a lot of the big wine brands that you see year after year that taste the same, they're pulling in grapes and they're adding a lot of stuff to make it taste the same every year. That's not how the high-end wines, you know, the high-end Napa wines, for example, are not produced that way. You've harvested a certain amount of grapes, you make a bunch of wine, and when it's gone, you move on to the next vintage, and the next year it might taste different because you're not adding a bunch of crap into the wine. So at any given time, we usually have somewhere between 5 and 8 wines available. We currently have 7 wines available right now. We just brought our rosé back, which had sold out, but we had a little extra that we were kind of holding on to for Black Friday. So we put that one back live just this week. So you know, we usually have a couple whites, a couple of reds, sometimes a rosé, and then right now we also have a reserve, which is an even higher end wine. Most of our typical kind of line price for our boxes are 3 liters for between $60 and $65 per box. 3 liters is the equivalent of 4 bottles. So call it $15 or $16 per bottle equivalent. And our target is to produce wines that would sell for $30 to $40 a bottle on shelf. That's kind of like the quality of wine, and price isn't a perfect indication of quality, but that's kind of the quality that we shoot for. So right now we have a Sauvignon Blanc from the Russian River Valley, an Unoaked Chardonnay from Yakima Valley, Washington, the Grenache Rosé from a really cool vineyard in Lodi that I was mentioning, a Pinot Noir from the San Luis Obispo Coast, a Merlot Syrah red blend from a single vineyard in Mendocino, Cabernet Sauvignon from Paso Robles, which has been our bestseller since day one. And then we just launched the single vineyard Napa Valley Cab from the Oak Knoll District, organically farmed, really just insanely beautiful wines. Our partner vineyard sells their wines, their single vineyard wines, for $100 or more per bottle. And we're selling the box for $120. So it might be the best value of Napa Valley wine that you could find in America right now.
And so you kind of already answered my next question, but I'll kind of still kind of go back to it. So you're sourcing all your wines pretty much from whether it be Napa or even a little bit into Central Coast California, I think you mentioned an Oregon wine. So are you, is your palate, is your flavor more kind of on those West Coast wines, or have you done other vintage batches from maybe other places, whether it be in the United States or the world? How does that work for you?
We are all California except one right now. It's actually Washington, Yakima Valley, Washington.
That's right.
Yeah. So we've done a lot from Sonoma. Several of our wines have either come from Sonoma broadly or even as narrow as the Russian River Valley. Our Sauvignon Blanc right now is a single vineyard Russian River Valley wine. We've done a couple of Pinots from the Russian River Valley. So to date, that it's all been California plus the one Washington wine. We have talked about expansion and bringing in wine from overseas. It's on the roadmap at some point. There are some, as you can imagine, some other considerations around licensing and importing and freight forwarding. And at what point does the quantity make sense from a cost to value standpoint? Based on volume, at some point in volume, it's actually an incredible value for us to bring in. If other volumes, the freight, all the other kind of ancillary costs that are part of it would drive the price up so much that we're not really giving you the savings anymore that we're seeing through the format. So that's, you know, we're looking at it pretty closely though. It's a, it's definitely part of our, you know, mid to long-term roadmap is to start introducing some imported wines.
This podcast is brought to you by Mushroom Media, the go-to digital media agency for all things marketing. From crafting captivating campaigns to decoding social media sorcery, Mushroom Media is here to empower your brand and help you scale. So whether you're brewing, distilling, or concocting the next big thing, Mushroom Media has a solution for you.
I'm curious also, so I was able to spend some time on the website. I see you all have a wine club. You know, you can shop now, you can buy off of the website. Are there any other distribution channels you've set up as well?
Yeah, we started rolling out into wholesale much. We did a little bit of testing early in this year, like really early this year, like January, February. And then starting around June, we started pushing much more heavily into wholesale. So that's, you know, think bars, restaurants, hotels, catering, that kind of thing. Okay. So we're currently in six markets. We're in Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, Colorado, Washington, D.C., and Maryland. Northern Virginia is coming soon. We're just kind of like waiting on that license. It's a little bit of a longer licensing period. So that whole kind of like D.C. area is part of it. And we're sort of holding there to make sure that we're figuring out kind of our blueprint for what does and doesn't work. I mean, anything, I think, is worth testing relatively small and figuring out what works before you start investing, you know, huge amounts of time and money into it. And so we're sort of holding on these markets. And believe me, we've learned a lot that doesn't work and we've learned a lot that does work. Right. And so we're taking those learnings. And as we ramp up for 2020, we were actually just last week as a team doing our 2024 planning and kind of going through our wholesale expansion plans and kind of teasing out, you know, how do we create a blueprint for success in the areas that we've seen be successful.
Okay. Great. And then just kind of follow up to that. Tell us how your wine club works.
Yeah. You can join for either one box, two boxes, or three boxes. And you can have it delivered monthly, bi-monthly, or quarterly. We sort of give you all the flexibility in the world. So the way it works is if you're a one box a month member, if you're a one box a month member, you get 10% off, two boxes, 12.5%, three boxes, 15%. So kind of the more you order, the higher the discounts. Yeah. And then we have we just did this big event, 100 person tasting event in reserve, actually the reserve launch event for in Washington, D.C. for this past weekend, and wine club members attend for free. The tickets for your general public were $40 a pop, and we give wine club members up to four tickets. So that's $160 in savings right there if you come with a group of friends to this tasting. So you get a lot of benefits. You also get first access to wines. The reserve wine was only available to the wine club for a while. We may introduce wines that are only available to the wine club if we can get our hands on something really special, but we can't quite, you know, produce the quantity. That we need to introduce it, you know, broad market. So there's a lot of benefits there. The way you join is you come to the website. There's a little button at the top that says join the wine club. Okay. You select your first shipment. You decide how many wines and how frequently you want that. You select which wines you want for your first one. And then once you do have a membership, you can make changes for each month. You can change your wines. You can skip a month really easily. Like, we make it as flexible as possible. If you're like, hey, I got too much wine, or I'm traveling this month or something, skip it. We don't care. Like, we'd rather have you be happy than try and hold you hostage in something. Yeah. So we make it super easy, super flexible. We give you a way to kind of try different wines. And, you know, we like to say we kind of curate your wine selection throughout the year.
Wow. Very interesting. So that it's just, you've created just a very flexible, easy kind of subscription model for your kind of direct to consumer there. So that's very interesting how you put that together. And then I'm actually going to go back into our conversation, because your story is fascinating. At what moment, like, so you started in 2021, was there one or two moments that you figured out, like, okay, we've got something here? At what moment did you feel like, okay, we're proving the concept? When was that moment for you, or maybe a couple moments that you might have had?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the like fail fast mentality. I wanted to get something out in the world as fast as humanly possible to figure out if this was a thing that people wanted. So I incorporated the business in April of 21, decided to go after it full time in May of 21. By August of 21, we had launched in market. We had wine sourced in bag, had got all of our co-packers, but had built a very kind of band-aided together supply mm-hmm. chain, but it was enough to get wine in a bag that wasn't oxidizing and onto a pallet. mm-hmm. And so I wanted to do it as a pilot launch first. I didn't want to go blow $100,000 on a full production run, and I didn't want to spend a year perfecting the brand. I knew we'd learn more in market. So on August 28th, 2021, we launched our first pilot launch in Cincinnati, Ohio only, which is where I'm personally located. Mm-hmm. And we sold out of a couple hundred boxes in 5 days. And I was like, okay, that's 800 bottles worth of wine. Like, we, and 60% were people I didn't know. And I'd spent the summer building a wait list, and like everybody I talked to, as I was building the website and getting the product done, I had just put up a wait list on my site and said, just join. There's no commitment, but like, I think we're going to sell out quickly. So join the wait list. And if you don't want to buy, fine. But like, if you do, this is the way to get it. So we did that. So then said, okay, this worked in Cincinnati, in my home market. Let's try it nationally. Found mm-hmm. a partner to kind of work through the compliance stuff. And then in November, we made another 300 boxes in November of 21. So just a couple months later, we did our national launch and sold out of those 300 boxes in 4 days. So 23 states. We sold to 23 states across consumers in 23 states across the country. So I was looking at the data and said, okay, we've sold 500 boxes, 2,000 bottles worth of wine in the first 9 days of business. I think there's something here. And that's when I flew out to Sonoma, spent about 3 weeks kind of formally building the supply chain that for all intents and purposes is still how it operates today, just on a bigger scale. And in January of 2022, so just a couple months after that, we launched our first kind of full national production run. And that's when I knew we really had something.
Great. And then can you talk to any sort of like partnerships or collaborations that you've formed that have been a difference maker for you?
Yeah. I mean, every wine that we produce is a collaboration. We don't go through like corporate brokerage houses or big corporations. Yeah. Like, every single wine is a direct one-to-one relationship with either the vineyard owner or the wine or a wine producer. And most of them I can't talk about because they sell their wines for a lot more than we charge. And so they don't want the brand name as part of it. But there are a couple I can talk to. The very first, we've done now the very first Pinot Noir, the test one, plus our last year's reserve wine and our first rosé all came from a vineyard called the Ketchum Estate. Very small, 10-acre, sustainably farmed vineyard in the Russian River Valley. Make stunningly beautiful Pinot Noirs. And Allie, she's the owner of Ketchum Estate, Allie Ketchum, is like the one person I know in the wine industry. And she was the first person I called when I had this idea back in 2021. And I just said, I can't get this idea out of my head. What do you think? And if you like it, do you want to do the first one together as a pilot run? And she was like, Jake, I love it. Let's do it. And that was kind of like off to the races. So Ketchum has been an incredible partner for us. And then the other one, we did a collaboration with it last year with a winemaker named Ian Devereaux. His winery is Smith Devereaux. Really beautiful winemaker from Napa. That's that red blend that I mentioned, the Mendocino red blend. And we actually put his name and logo on the side of that, on the box itself, as kind of a collaboration series. And that, you know, that's always fun to be able to celebrate the winemakers who we partner with. So those are a couple of them, but every one of our partnerships has a story. Unfortunately, I can't name them, but they all have their own sort of unique story of how we partner with them. And then the other one that I would say is, there are a handful of us who all have this vision of improving box wine across the United States. And we are working on kind of putting together a consortium or a collaboration between all of us to help grow awareness of quality box wine. We see each other as sort of compatriots in this, not competitors, even though we are technically, you know, also trying to compete for high-end box wine sales. We're much more kind of collaborators in this, because if we grow awareness of high-end box wine, we will all grow, right? It's sort of like a rising tide raises all boats, right? So we're working on a collaboration there. There are a couple in Europe. Europe's far ahead of us in the US and box wine and alternative packaging. And so we've had some conversations with our UK counterparts who have built this a few years ago, a similar kind of collaboration. And so we're working on partnering up together to kind of build something like this in 2024.
Okay, great. And you've been listening to the Sipping Success Podcast. I'm your host, Casey Hawkinson. We've been talking with Jake Whitman, the CEO, founder of Really Good Box Wine. It's been a fascinating conversation. We're kind of towards the end of the podcast, sadly, but last couple questions here. First up would be, what sort of advice would you give your younger self as you, in particular, gone through this latest journey of entrepreneurship? What are some things you didn't know that you might give your younger self some advice on?
The advice I always give entrepreneurs, and I sort of learned this as a young entrepreneur, and I think sort of recognized that I needed to go learn, so, is, you know, you to be an entrepreneur, you got to fall in love with entrepreneurship, not the idea of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And that means, you know, I'll go from, in one breath, go from a podcast interview like this one to talking to a VC to writing legal copy and trying so that I can save legal costs, and then writing email subject lines and disclaimers for new, and setting up discount codes, right? And then and everything in between. So like the equivalent of a bar owner cleaning up the vomit in their bathroom at 3 a.m, whatever that looks like for your industry, you got to fall in love with that too. And you got to fall in love with the journey of it, of the ups and the downs and the stresses of, you know, we're weeks away from running out of cash. How the hell do I solve this problem, right? Not the like the corporate problems that we ran into of like, oh shoot, I'm behind on an arbitrary deadline for a product that's launching 18 months from now, but like very real problems of like, I have payroll to cover and we got to make sure that we have enough cash in the bank account. Like that kind of stuff is real, and it happens to pretty much every entrepreneur I know. Mm-hmm. And you just got to have the fortitude to do it. And you got to actually in a weird way, enjoy it, or you're just going to get burnt out and you're going to be so stressed out that it's really hard to kind of continue at the high level that you need to be successful. So, you know, my guidance is really just make sure if you're going to do it, and if you do want to do it, then go for it. It's the most wonderful thing in the world. That's something that the vast majority of people do not have the opportunity to do, is go build something. But just recognize that like, it's not the glamour that you see on Instagram and that you see Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk touting, right? It is a hard journey for anybody. And I don't care what entrepreneur you're talking to. They have those, you know, they look calm on the surface and they have the duck feet flying underwater, just trying to stay afloat. I promise you, every single entrepreneur you talk to is going through this stuff. So just know that. And if you like it, do it, then go for it. I think it's the most wonderful journey in the world.
Outstanding message there. And then if anybody would want to be in contact with you about just maybe they might have a question, because a lot of our listeners are, you know, food and beverage, wine and spirits. So if anybody out there has a question, or maybe want to partner with you on something, what might be the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty open book. My email is jake@reallygoodboxedwine.com. So shoot me an email. I'm also, you know, you can message me on LinkedIn. Those are probably the two best ways. I guess you could message us on Instagram, but I may or may not see it. Our team might see it before I do. So yeah, yep. LinkedIn and email is probably the best way.
Okay. Well, great. Hey, I appreciate the time. Really interesting episode. I could maybe even see a part two coming in the future in 2024. So we'll remain in touch. But you've been listening to the Sipping Success Podcast. I've been your host, Casey Hawkinson. And we've had the pleasure of talking with Jake Whitman, the founder and CEO of Really Good Boxed Wine. Jake, thanks again. And we will see you all later. Bye.
All right. Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode of Sipping Success, brought to you by Mushroom Media. We hope our discussions have left you thirsting for more knowledge in the world of beverages and alcohol. Stay connected with us on social media for updates. And remember, the journey to success is best enjoyed one sip at a time. Keep exploring trends, connecting with leaders, and scaling your brand. Until our glasses meet again, cheers to your continued success, and may your cups always runneth over with inspiration. We'll catch you in the next episode.